Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
So guys, I want to get your opinions quickly on some speculation from NHL insiders that I've seen this morning, trickling out from last night and potentially this morning as well. But Brad Marchand, Greg Wyshynski on the Sheet said that he's going to go to likely the highest bidder. Doesn't matter the team. Well, I guess that's the nature of unrestricted free agency, so nothing too surprising there potentially. But the one I really wanted to talk about was Sam Bennett, because David Pagnotta on NHL Network said that Bennett is pretty much locked in to stay in Florida and that they're talking around 8x8. So we'll see if that comes to fruition, but I think it does appear likely that the Panthers recognize Bennett's value as well, and that Bennett would probably maybe take a little bit less to stay in a situation that he loves both on and off the ice.
Yeah, because I think his value, like if he wanted to cash in, he could cash in for more than that. So that would be somewhat of a hometown discount, probably just because of the playoffs that he's had. We talked about, there was a report that he might get as much as $10 million on the free market, but yeah, why wouldn't he want to stay in Florida? So that makes sense.
Yeah, I believe there were reports during the season that Florida and Bennett had some talks and that their offer was not lowball, but was seen as lower than Bennett thought he was going to be able to get. So I imagine if they're coming up to $8 million, like that's probably a pretty sizable jump, and maybe that's closer to a place that makes Sam Bennett happy. It also tells me that the Panthers are making Bennett their priority, right? Like we've mentioned that they have three big UFAs, Bennett, Marchand, Aaron Ekblad. And I leaned towards maybe Ekblad would be their priority because they have more young help up front than they do in defense. Like even a guy like Mackie Samuskevich, who had an encouraging rookie year, but now isn't playing in the playoffs. Like, he projects as a middle six forward for them. Anton Lundell can slide up to second line center, you know, if they lose Bennett. So I wondered if they would prioritize Ekblad just for that. He's also one of their team leaders. But it seems like Bennett's now the priority, and they'll bump up Seth Jones to their top pairing and then figure out the defense behind him if they're unable to keep Ekblad.
And Pagnotta also had a report on Ekblad as well, saying that Aaron Ekblad likely headed to free agency. Florida want him at less than his current 7.5 AAV, something in the six range. And he said that on NHL Network as well. So
yeah, and that's like that just feels like that feels like asking him to take a hometown discount. And you know, Ekblad's like still in his prime years. I think he's 29, right? Like he hasn't even turned 30 yet. So
a lot of miles though. A lot of miles.
True. It's a big injury. Very true. Too. Yeah.
So
I can see the hesitation there, but like I imagine someone, if he goes to the open market, like I could see Ekblad getting $8+ million a year. Like I could see someone, again, when your player plays a lot of minutes on a team that's been to three straight Stanley Cup finals, like your value goes up. Teams love seeing that. When you lay out Connor McDavid with a great open ice hit in the Stanley Cup final, teams notice. So even if we think that might be an overpay or that there's risk because of, like you said, the miles and the wear and tear, someone will do it. Like someone's going to fall in love with that resume.
How would you feel if it was Boston?
I wouldn't love it. I mean, I like Aaron Ekblad as a player. Obviously, they could use help on the right side of their defense, but I think you can find it in a more affordable, more sensible direction than splurging for Aaron Ekblad and trying to be the highest bidder there.
Yeah, I mean, the help is needed up front so much so that it's hard to weigh that as like a the risk reward to that is not a great not great for Boston, just because that money should go somewhere. For any, Marco Sturm even talked about it in his introductory press conference, which was, you know, I love the team, we need to fill in up front. So it just doesn't quite make sense for them right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, what's the phrase, like, one man's trash is another's treasure? Like, I feel like the Bruins should be trying to find some players that are younger that didn't maybe fit somewhere else, or just their value just isn't through the roof at this point, as opposed to, you know, the veteran that's proven themselves. And really, there's only one way to go from there. It's kind of downwards, right? I don't think the Bruins should be marrying themselves to a long-term contract with Ekblad, given his mileage and injury history, despite how well of a player he is, how well he's playing right now for the Panthers in this moment. But that's right now in 2025. You know, going forward, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, I think another name worth throwing out here, because it started to make the rounds on social, but the big rumor out of Dallas has been that they might be willing to trade Jason Robertson, which seems kind of crazy to me, and I don't even know if the Bruins would be players there. I do like Robertson as a player. But the other one is that they would consider trading Mason Marchman, who has 1 year left, $4.5 million. And I saw Mark Diver tweeted, you know, that he could see that being a fit for the Bruins and for Marco Sturm. I agree. I guess my hang up is he is only signed for one more year. He's 29. So are you then extending him? What does that extension look like? To me, if it's like 3 or 4 years, fine, I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. If it's 6 or 7, I think I'd be a little worried, because he's another guy who, you know, plays with some physicality, bigger body, 6'5", will give you, you know, 20-25 goals a year. So you're not talking about a top of the lineup guy, but he's also not getting paid like that. He's getting paid like a good third liner, which I think is exactly what he is.
Would love him on my team, especially if I knew that he was going to be around for more than just the 1 year at face value. Like you mentioned his trait, Scott, and yeah, he's a big bodied, he's a hard nosed player that would fit in nicely in, you know, your middle six. You wouldn't expect anything crazy from him, right? Can you get 20 goals, maybe 45 points? That's fine. My question is, what's the cost if you're trading for him? So I would have to know what that is before really saying, yeah, I like him, because I wouldn't want to give up too much for him, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And that's where, like, I guess I would hope that maybe Dallas is viewing it more as a salary dump, because they do have to free up some money to keep some guys, some of their younger guys. So maybe there's not a bidding war where, you know, it's five teams trying to one-up each other. Maybe it is everyone kind of conservatively making offers, because they know what Dallas's cap situation is, and you can get them kind of at a little bit of a discounted price. That's where I would be interested. Yeah, I'm not giving, I don't think I would give up any real high end valuable asset.
No, that's not a first round pick, kind of a trade. Definitely not. So yeah, that's definitely not, that would not be worth it, because you could use that. We talked about it last episode, like, you have several first round picks out besides just the number 7 overall that have value and you could use to get like a legitimate
top. But even like a younger player, like a Patra, like I wouldn't trade Patra for him.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
You know what I mean? So like it would have to just be a no brainer type situation where, okay, yeah, we'll take his salary, but is the extension in place? And okay, yeah, it's like a mid round pick or something, or whatever. Like, yeah. I don't know, but yeah. The Robertson thing, I don't know. I don't get that. Why?
It's weird. It's like he had a really slow start this past year, and that was a big reason why he didn't make the Four Nations team for USA. But then he had an awesome second half, gets injured at the very end of the regular season, misses a bunch of playoff games, wasn't all that effective when he did come back. And so it's like, I guess to an extent, I understand why there's maybe a little bit of sour feelings towards him at this point. But man, it's also like just 3 months ago, he was playing like one. Like, I remember tracking, you know, David Pastrnak, like points since December 1st. And It was like him and Kucherov, but it was like Jason Robertson right behind them. Like, he was also on this incredible run for several months and ends up as the Stars' leading scorer on the season. And yeah, now apparently they're like down enough on him that they're thinking about trading him, which, yeah, is a little odd to me.
I mean, their future is not Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. It's Rupe Hintz
or Matthew Jason. Shane, who's an unrestricted free agent. Right. Like,
right. It's Jason Robertson, Rupe Hintz, Wyatt Johnson. Like, that's
Rantanen, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yes, Rantanen too. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they know more about his injury than other people. No, like, maybe they have an assessment of that. Who knows?
Jim Neal's a good. He's done a good job though. Like, he doesn't seem like a very emotional GM. He seems pretty calculated. So maybe there is something behind the scenes that we don't know, Bridget, to your point. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he's 25. Like, he turns 26 next month.
I get it.
Very much in his prime. Like, yeah, it would be pretty crazy to me.
Especially because they're in win now mode still, of course. Right? Like, it's, I don't know, whatever. Bridget, did you have any final thoughts before we go into the mailbag questions?
No.
Scott, do you?
Nope, let's go.
All right. Let's start off with Liz. And again, thank you all very much for submitting the questions. And she starts off with a coaching question. She says, with the hiring of Marco Sturm, I was wondering how a new coach gets up to speed on all the players that will be at training camp. Did he talk to Neely, Sweeney, prior coaches, Mugenel and Providence, etc.? Does he watch tape? Is he told by the Bees front office what positions they want players to play, etc.? Or will Sturm be able to go into it and do what he wants? Or will Sturm want to be a blank slate and not form any opinions until he has a chance to talk with all the players and see them on the ice? Let's start with that question, guys.
So I would say it's taking out like the last thing, the blank slate. It's really all of the above for everything else. Marco Sturm is going to be well informed on all these players by the time training camp starts. He's not yet. He admitted as much at his press conference, but he's got, you know, 2.5 months or whatever to go here before training camp. So, yeah, he'll talk to everyone Liz mentioned. It's probably not as much Neil. He's not involved really in player development all that much, but like Sweeney, Adam McQuaid, Jamie Langenbrunner, Ryan Mugenel down in Providence, his assistant coaches who obviously are holdovers and have worked with a bunch of these guys. And then he's going to watch video himself and, you know, start to form some of his own opinions. I would be surprised if his process is anything different than that. I just think head coaches want as much information on these guys as possible. So they're going to want to know, hey, here's some good things he's done. Here's, you know, some of the things that have held him back at times or that we haven't loved. Here's how we see him playing or where we see him as a fit in the lineup. Like, he'll get all those feedbacks, but then he will still form his own opinions. I think he'll have an open mind throughout training camp. But he'll have all the background info going in.
Yeah. I mean, I think he probably already has a decent grasp as a whole. Just you have to be prepared for your interviews. So, and he did talk about how he started to have conversations with some of the veteran guys. So we know he's done some groundwork in terms of getting to know getting to know players by talking to them. But we, as most people know, they're not all in Boston right now. So it's still going to be some time before he sees some of these guys face to face. And then it's going to require watching a lot of film. Yes. And not just on the guys in Boston, but also the guys in Providence, because he's going to have an idea of the whole system, including some of the younger guys that maybe they try to assimilate into the roster. And, you know, he could have different opinions of players than previous coaches, Sacco and Montgomery had. So mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of homework to do. And this is the kind of situation where you never feel like you've done enough. It always feels like there's something more, some more video you should have watched, some more talking to a certain person you should have done. Like, and I do think he's going to lean on guys like Bergeron and Chara. I wanted to mention this last episode. We ran out of time, but Bergeron was at his introductory press conference And he like looked at Bergeron and pointed at Bergeron during answering certain questions. And I just got the sense that he is going to be in contact with Bergeron a lot because Bergeron is like the bridge between him and Pastrnak and McAvoy and the guys that Bergeron like played with that are still on the Bruins. He's got the ability to bridge them, be somebody that Sturm can talk to and like, okay, how does this guy operate? Is like, is Pastrnak going to respond negatively or positively if you do this or this or it, like different things. Like he knows these players. He is going to be a really good tool for Sturm to lean on in order to bridge that gap and to maybe speed up the learning process of what these guys are like, what coaching works, what they would respond negatively to, all of that. And Chara, we know, is already in an advisory role. So I feel like those two guys will be people that could help Sturm in terms of getting to know what the best way to coach certain guys is.
Yep, absolutely. And yes, I do believe it's all of the above. And first and foremost, Marco Sturm, he has seen these Bruins players in action before throughout the league, whether it was on Boston or on teams prior to coming to Boston. I mean, he was on the LA Kings bench for 4 years. So we saw a lot of Elias Lindholm in person up close, saw a lot of Nikita Zadorov. So he's not unfamiliar with the, he saw a lot of Hampus Lindholm, I'm sure, in Anaheim. So he's not unfamiliar with a lot of these core players in Boston. And he certainly has watched, you know, some more tape and some more film on these players. I think, you know, he talked in his press conference and then his radio appearance across the street later in the day, he mentioned just, he knows that Lauri had a really bad plus minus. He knows that Casey Mittelstadt has another level to get to. He knows that Jeremy Swayman struggled. He knows what needs to improve with the players on the roster and systematically for the team. The biggest question right now for Marco Sturm that's really preventing him from doing his job fully is not knowing which players the Bruins might trade for or acquire via unrestricted free agency. So until he knows that, which we're only about, I don't know, 4 weeks away from, I'd say that once we're into the second week of July, we should have a really good idea of what this roster should be. Obviously things can trickle later into the summer and then there'll probably be some training camp spots to be won. But until he knows his full roster, he won't be able to fully get his hands around everything. But I think to this point, he's probably done as much as he can and is continuing to do so, obviously.
Is it going to be another one of those years where Scott's riding on 4th of July and his 4th of July celebrations are ruined?
I hope not.
Well, I mean, knock on wood, but the Bruins don't do that. I mean, most famously, they traded Tyler Seguin on July 4th, but usually Don Sweeney has his checklist and gets it done on July 1. Like, I wonder if that shifts at all this year, but usually they go in with, right or wrong, like swing or miss, but they go in with a clear plan on July 1st and like get their moves done quickly. So usually by 5 p.m. on July 1st, you have a pretty good idea what the team's going to look like. Usually anything after that is kind of smaller moves. Obviously, the 1 year you were waiting for Bergeron and Krejci was a little different, but they're not ones to like wait around and see, oh, who's left after the first day of free agency? Who can we maybe get at a value? Like the way Don Sweeney has operated is like he has a list of targets, and as soon as 12 o'clock hits noon on July 1, like it's on the phone. Here's our offer. Can we get a deal done?
Do you guys expect that to be the case this year? Usually all the big ticket guys go on July 1. We're not really waiting, to your point, Scott. Have you guys heard some speculation about this year maybe free agency drags on a little bit longer of a process for certain players?
Well, the reason I could see it drag on a little longer is if Mitch Marner is sort of holding like a bidding war for himself. Like if Mitch Marner drags out his choice, then there's going to be dominoes that don't fall right away after that, because anyone who decides to prioritize Mitch Marner and thinks they're in the running is going to wait for him to make a decision before they pivot to someone else. So those secondary guys that they would pivot to, they might also, unless they get blown away by someone else on day one who says, you know what, we're not going after Mitch Marner. We're going to prioritize Nick Ehlers. And like Ehlers signs with them because that team prioritized him. But you could easily see like Ehlers wait, Besser wait to see where Marner goes. So because there's a Mitch Marner this year, and usually there's not, if he takes his time, then I could see free agency slowing down a bit. But I could also see him knowing on July 1 where he goes. Like, he might already have a team in mind, and we know, you know, whether they're supposed to or not, these teams and agents talk behind the scenes and through back channels, right? Like, when you see a guy sign at 12:15, that deal didn't get negotiated between 12 and 12:15. Like, there was that they were already talking through intermediaries.
Yeah, that would make sense though, Brian. So, hey, 4th of July. 4th of July, Scott writing that the Bruins got Mitch Marner. No? Yes, no?
Hey, that was my priority for the offseason. I would do it.
Okay, let's move on to Kelly. Kelly asked, I enjoy your shot at being GM for a day. Saying that, put your hats on again. Would you be willing to give up your first round selection this year in a package for Marty Natchez? Myself, I would rather do that than pay a crazy amount for a Besser or Ehlers. Thanks. Keep up the great work. I'll just say quickly before you guys give your opinion, again, similar to what Scott said with Mason Marshman, like Natchez has 1 year left in his contract before he becomes a UFA. So for me, any deal for Marty Natchez, you have to know that there's an extension. It's either a sign and trade, or you know that there's an extension in place. If there's not, you can't give up what it would cost to get Natchez if you're going to risk losing him the following year. And as we've seen with Mikko Rantanen and clearly Marty Natchez, who isn't too happy in Colorado, these players might not always be afraid to bounce around until they end up where they want to be.
Yeah, so you would have to know that Boston is a place he wants to be. Like you said, extension has to be in place. You don't make the trade and then talk to him. Like, you have that deal basically ready to go, ready to sign, like the Bruins did with Hampus Lindholm when, you know, where he signed an extension like right after the trade. So if there is a deal in place, do I trade 7 overall for Natchez? I'm going to be honest, I keep going back and forth on this because he's 26. He even with the weirdness of this season and playing two different teams, he ends up with 83 points, like had a really good season. He's broken 70 points in other years, pushing 30 goals. You know, like, I really like the players. He's one of the fastest players in the NHL. So if you want to play with pace, like, very few do it like Marty Natchez. I think I would, because the chances of the 7th overall pick turning into a player as good as Natchez are, it's not impossible at all. Like, it's Jake O'Brien could end up being better than Natchez and as a natural center. Because that's another part of the Natchez conversation is, excuse me, there had been rumors like a couple years ago that he wanted to play center and wasn't getting that chance in Carolina. Well, he's still not getting that chance. He didn't play center in Colorado either. Personally, I don't see him as a center. I think he's better off staying at wing. But yeah, I think push comes to shove, if I have an extension in place, I think I'd do it, but I could also see an argument against it.
Do you think that you would have to give the 7th overall pick if you're the Bruins, or could you give them one of next year's first round picks?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I think it would probably have to be set. Like, Colorado would push hard for 7 this year. If you can do it with a future first, then even better, then I'm definitely in. But I feel like it would probably have to be 7.
Well, it would probably have to be a future Boston pick, because if it's a future first round pick from Toronto or Florida that the Bruins have acquired recently, those are going to be bottom 10 first round picks most likely. And Colorado would know that. So Colorado would be probably hedge on wanting Boston's future first round pick and hoping that the Bruins have a mid round pick or better. And in that situation, like Scott said, last episode, that would take away the Bruins' ability to offer sheet people, because now one of their own picks is going away. That would still be true with number 7 this year. You know, it's tough. The number 7 is tough, because I would be more okay with it depending on how the board falls, right? Like when Scott mentions Jake O'Brien, Jake O'Brien might get drafted 4th overall, and he might not go to the Bruins anyway, right? And so it's like, okay, so maybe I'm passing up on Caleb Desnoyer or Roger McQueen or Brady Martin for Marty Natchez. And Caleb Desnoyer, I like him a lot. I watch him, and there's something about him that he doesn't have the offensive ceiling, I don't think, as some of the other players around him. Like, I think Jake O'Brien, I think he has a better, potentially better offensive ceiling in the NHL. But Caleb Desnoyer, I could see him being just a really good second liner, or I don't know. So maybe I would be more likely to give up the 7th overall pick if somebody that I want the Bruins to get, I like, might go before them anyway. It's tough to know, because you're trading this pick away before you know how the board falls, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, but by the way, like, Desnoyer is another guy where you end the season with just like a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth. Now, he was banged up, so that's part of it, but like, he dominates the QMJHL playoffs, like 2 points a game, just taking over. And then you get into the Memorial Cup, tougher competition, and he doesn't do a whole lot. And he was banged up. I think he's fine now, but he was a little injured at that point. So like, I'm sure that was a factor. But it was also kind of like some people's worst fear, which is like, all right, when you get him out of the queue, which is a little bit of an easier league, like, is he going to struggle? And in 3 games or whatever it was, again, very small sample, but yeah, like it looked much tougher on him.
Yeah, because when we're talking CHL leagues, I think it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's, if we're talking quality of play, it's OHL, WHL, Q.
Yeah, I would say that's generally the consensus.
So that we've talked about that with these prospects. I don't know. I'm not trying to take away from Caleb Desnoyer. But when you see what somebody like Jake O'Brien is, which is a prospect I've been talking about for months now, what he's done at the OHL level, and they're in the same range, and a lot of people were talking for a while that Desnoyer is clearly the better prospect. I'm like, how can we look at their numbers and say that, or just watch their play? I mean, they're all great prospects, but we've talked about this for a long time. There's no consensus. So, I don't know. It, like I said, If O'Brien falls to the Bruins at 7, like I would like them to take him, right? But if he goes at 4, I'm like, okay, then yeah, I'll take Natchez over maybe Desnoyer or McQueen or Martin. I don't know. It just, that's why it's tricky, because you're giving these picks away before you know how the board falls, like I said. So,
are you saying, Brian, that maybe you see it being like, all right, Bruins are on the clock, and we're all sitting around our TV, and Scott and I are probably sitting at TV Garden, right? Is that where we're going to be for that? Because Sweeney and
either the Garden or Warrior. I don't. So, they haven't told us yet.
So we'll be wherever they are for the press conference that will follow, but we'll all be sitting there watching the clock, and then all of a sudden from a room over, Don Sweeney will trade the 7th overall pick for Marty Natchez because he doesn't like what's left on the board. Is that what you're saying, Brian? Like the last minute, like you're on the clock, you're like.
Well, not necessarily because now Colorado sees the same options available and maybe they don't want who's left.
Well, right. And like if that were the trade, if it's number 7 for Natchez, Colorado might want to wait. They might have certain guys in mind. And if they're not there, they say, you know what, like. Didn't break the way we want. We're not.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you'd have to trade that pick before the first.
Well, I'm saying I think Colorado would maybe want to wait until draft night to make that trade. So yeah, like the Bruins could offer number 7 now, and Colorado could say, "Get back to us on draft night. We'll see how the board falls."
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
like Colorado might not want to trade for a pick if they think there's a chance that no one they love is going to fall there.
Right. Okay. So like, for example, like maybe a Frondell or a Higgins is available around 7 and they're like, okay, you want to talk now, Bruins? Maybe something like that. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. A lot of options. Well, if the deal was to be struck before draft night, I think I'd probably fall with Scott. Like I think I'd probably do it. But it's a very difficult call to make. It really is. Bridget, what about you?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I have reservations about him. I just, with the history of him when he was going through his restricted free agency and now wanting to be out of another organization, it's just, it just makes you pause for a second and go, okay, well, what if he does the same thing when he gets.
Maybe he's waiting to go to an East Coast city. That's as close to the Atlantic Ocean as possible. So we
can go home
with his Czech friends in Boston as line mates. I mean, yeah. I can see all joking aside, I can see Boston being a place you'd want to go to. But obviously, we don't know exactly what his values are.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.